You might wonder why foods like spätzle and bratwurst are so easy to come by in Huntsville, Alabama. This southern city is dotted with restaurants like Hildegard's and Ole Heidelberg. But that's likely not the first thing you'll notice about Huntsville. The skyline of the city is also dotted with rockets. Rockets that were developed right here, under the storied leadership of a German guy named Wernher von Braun.
He was a Nazi, but if you worked for the German government in World War II, you had to be a Nazi. And he was not a card-carrying Nazi. He didn't strut around in a Nazi uniform. He was a rocket scientist.
You're listening to Gravy.
Gravy?
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 Stories of the changing American South through the foods we eat. We are a production of the Southern Foodways Alliance, and I'm Tina Antolini. Today, our new season of episodes starts with a story that connects the dots between the German food in Huntsville, Alabama, and the technology that brought humans to the moon. It may start with schnitzel, but it takes us into the complexities of national pride, changing allegiances, and our starry eyes for space travel. To guide us through this story, here's Dana Bialik.
Okay, put your heads back against the headrest, hold your arms and legs.
The U.S. Space and Rocket Center is a campus of attractions in Huntsville, Alabama. It's the official visitor center for NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center, and it's home to more space exploration memorabilia than almost anywhere else in the world. There are multiple exhibition halls, an IMAX theater, a space shuttle, and a park full of rockets, the most prominent part of Huntsville's skyline. Visitors can get a real sensory feel for the space program. Outside, the space shot simulates the force of a real launch. It sends visitors 140 feet in the air at an acceleration of almost 4 G's. And inside?
This is gherkin salad, and then we're gonna get a little bit of sauerkraut, and then we have the parsley boiled potatoes. Now we'll go over here and get one of my favorites, which is called the Jägerschnitzel.
You know, schnitzel. It's a thin slice of meat that's tenderized, coated in breadcrumbs, and pan-fried. This one's topped with a Jaeger sauce, a mushroom gravy.
Do you want a beer?
That's Claudia Jones. She's wearing a dirndl, a traditional Bavarian dress with a fitted blouse and bodice that gathers at the waist. Claudia's taken the outfit even further. She's got pretzel earrings dangling from her ears and the word beer woven down the sides of her knee-high socks. There's no mistaking the theme here.
Some of the other things we have here is also your authentic bratwurst.
Claudia's the director of special events here at the Space and Rocket Center. We're in the Saturn V Hall, named for the rocket. And on Thursday evenings, Claudia helps transform this space into a German-style beer garden. The event tagline is Stein and Dine, and every week hundreds of folks show up to do just that. There's a buffet of German food, local and imported brews, and live music, often an oompa-pa band playing polka. But, of course, we're not in Germany. We're in a museum showcasing the achievements of the U.S. space program. And above us is a 363-foot-long rocket.
I think that this is one of the most bizarre cultural phenomenons of the region, because here you are in Huntsville, Alabama, and you're sitting here eating this German food underneath a real Saturn V rocket. It's sort of like the spirit of Werner is kind of hovers over you as you're eating your schnitzel and drinking your Oktoberfest or whatever it is. It's just, I don't think you can get odder than that.
That's a longtime resident of the area who asked to remain anonymous. I agree with him on the oddness. It is weird.
I come here probably 2 or 3 times a month because I have a 10-year-old son. Now, where are you, David?
On the moon.
Oh, you're on the moon. And what's it like being on the moon?
Well, it's no gravity.
Well, there is some gravity on the moon.
There's a little gravity, but not much.
David's wearing a blue jumpsuit, a flight suit, with a NASA patch on the front and an American flag on the arm. Certainly spending time at the U.S. Space and Rocket Center has encouraged David's interest in space travel, but it's also inspired his interest in German.
Tell me what you've been learning.
Hallo, I'm Birgit, and sehr gut. Ich weiß nicht, and some of that.
And German is not just on the plates and rolling off the tongues of visitors. The rocket above us, the Saturn V, that's the rocket that took Americans to the moon multiple times in the late 60s and early 70s. The rocket is taller than a 36-story building and has more than 3 million parts, one of the greatest feats of 20th century engineering. It was developed right here, in Huntsville. Decades later, it's still a great source of pride for this country, and it has a real German heritage. The moon rocket was designed under the leadership of Wernher von Braun and his team. Back up just a couple of decades to the Second World War, and that same team was in Peenemünde, Germany, busy developing the V-2 rocket. That was the first rocket to cross the boundary with space, but it wasn't up there to explore. It was the pinnacle of Hitler's vengeance weapons.
I don't think any of us even talked about the war. We were working to go to the moon.
That's Leon Allen, but everyone at NASA knew him as Mickey. His first bosses were the Germans from Peenemünde. Now Mickey volunteers at the Space and Rocket Center, walks the floor in a white coat, answers questions, and talks to visitors about the work he did. Mickey worked on the Saturn V. More specifically, he was part of a team that determined just what size rocket we'd need to generate the 7 million pounds of thrust that would take us from here to the moon.
That was amazing to me that we did what we did in the 60s. When I first started work in 1960, I still used my slide rule.
It's easy to be amazed by what they achieved in the 60s. It is amazing. And inside the Saturn V hull, the size of that accomplishment literally looms big. What also looms is a complete reverence for Wernher von Braun and all the German leadership that built our space program.
During World War II, they were the enemy. But yet, by the 50s and 60s, they were our mentors. They taught us how to be good engineers, if you will.
And this is when having a fork full of Jaeger schnitzel under the Saturn V starts to feel really curious. Every beer garden table is decorated with both the German flag and the Alabama state flag. How is it that, in the wake of World War II, we were able to absorb von Braun and his team as our own? And how the heck did they get to Huntsville? Everyone around here knows the basics of this story.
The Peenemünde Group in Germany, they kind of disbanded after the war, and they fled into all directions.
Everything started going haywire over there, you know what I mean?
The Allies had already started going into Germany before the war ended, looking for scientists and engineers and people who would have expertise that might be valuable.
Everybody involved in World War II on the, you know, the Ally side was really keenly interested in the V2 technology. The Americans wanted it, the British wanted it, the French wanted it, the Soviets wanted it, everybody wanted it.
Von Braun and the group, they said, okay, to whom do we go? The French? No. The British, they can't afford us. The Russians, you got to be kidding. So the Americans were left over. They have the money and the wherewithal. Sure, that's where we'll go.
They sent Wernher von Braun's younger brother, Magnus, on a bicycle down a hill to go, you know, bump into the American soldiers that were nearby.
We thought that we were knowledgeable of missile defense and how to make a missile, but we did not have any idea how advanced the von Braun team was.
The U.S. went and scooped up Wernher von Braun and his friends and stuff and like, hey, come over here, help us out.
It was called Project Paperclip, a post-war operation that brought German specialists to the United States for government employment. They had expertise that we didn't have and wanted. But what we also wanted was to deny the Nazi expertise to other countries that might use it against us, countries like the Soviet Union. And at the time, our interest in von Braun and his team of 127 rocket experts wasn't about sending humans into space. It was about weaponry. What we were after was ICBMs, intercontinental ballistic missiles. The team was first brought to Fort Bliss, Texas, where they lived in a military barracks. In those first few years, they were escorted almost everywhere. There were a lot of unknowns about how the population would react to them, and there was also a lingering fear that any enemy of our nation might scoop them up by offering perks that the U.S. wasn't offering. And so we were quick to offer citizenship to the German team, and their families from Germany began to join them. In 1949, the U.S. Army was looking to consolidate its rocket development program. Fort Bliss wasn't large enough, and so the Germans were transferred to Redstone Arsenal in Huntsville, along with thousands of others working on rocket development. In Huntsville, they weren't confined to a military base. They bought homes and built lives and raised children here.
Do
George von Thiessenhausen was 8 years old when he arrived in Huntsville. He was born in Germany. His father was part of the Peenemünde group, and the two share a name.
The thing that my parents decided was that if he did not come back from the war, I would get his name. So, of course, I was born, and he wasn't there, so my mother gave me his name. And then suddenly, you know, about 3, 4, 5 months after the war, he walks into town, there he is, you know. You're home, you know. So by that time, I was already toddling along.
Now there were two Georges and a war-torn country.
I was born in 45, right at the end of the war, or toward the end of the war, and things were literally falling apart. And the country was in total destruction. And so I grew up over there amidst the ruins. It was difficult.
But despite the challenges of growing up in post-war Germany, the transition to Huntsville wasn't easy.
Huntsville was, it was culture shock. You know, it was just, I mean, there was nothing.
Before the war, Huntsville was a small, quiet place, a farming town with an economy built on cotton and, of all things, watercress. Watercress is an aquatic leafy green, and although it has never been a major cash crop, in the first half of the 20th century, Huntsville was known as the watercress capital of the world. This began to change when, in 1941, the U.S. Army selected 35,000 acres to build chemical munitions facilities that would become Redstone Arsenal. This brought a lot of people and jobs to the area. But then, as the war ended, the munitions facilities were no longer needed. Huntsville was experiencing a slump. And culturally, a southern farming town was far from what the Germans were used to.
I remember that we'd go into this grocery store, and they had this, they called it wholesome bread. And it was this white, floppy stuff. And we used to squeeze that thing together to make one slice out of the whole loaf of bread because we can't eat that white stuff, you know.
The rocket development program moving to Huntsville revived the arsenal, and the city, too, began to take off. The population grew exponentially, and more Germans arrived.
So von Braun and some of the other people there kind of churned up the city council and tried to get them to bring some cultural things in here.
They had a tremendous influence on the establishment of Huntsville's university and symphony and, well, on the food.
So they had a delicatessen that opened up. Marlin's Delicatessen, it was called. And they imported food from Germany, and it became a hit. So pretty soon other stores started saying, we need to bring this kind of stuff in. And then Kroger's would start bringing actual pumpernickel in, and things like that.
There's still a German aisle at the Kroger in Huntsville that sells specialties like curried ketchup and bags of traditional German egg noodles called Spätzle. And now there are multiple German-style restaurants, a clue that Huntsville's reception of the German team was positive. And it was, overwhelmingly so. The emerging Cold War and fears around it seemed to sweep away any worries about potential Nazi infiltration. And, like Mickey said earlier, nobody was that concerned with what von Braun's team had participated in Germany. Everyone was so focused on the technology. Plus, the work at Redstone Arsenal was exciting. It was an arms race with the Soviet Union. There was a rush of fresh young minds from all over the nation to Huntsville. And all the while, von Braun was proposing ideas for space stations and satellites, concepts that were about human spaceflight instead of missile development. In 1958, President Eisenhower established the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA. At this point, von Braun was able to transfer out of the U.S. Army and into NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center. Although it was located within Redstone Arsenal, it had a distinctly civilian, not military, mission. Yet it brought with it a fierce and competitive nationalism. Enter the space race. Rockets are a dual-use technology. Here's what that means. You know those rockets that we were using to send bombs everywhere? Those are the same rockets we would use to send satellites, and later humans, into orbit.
Kennedy said, you know, we're going to put a man on the moon. And then von Braun says, you know, that's what we'll do.
The Soviet Union had launched the first satellite into space, the first dog into space, the first cosmonaut, and by golly, we were not going to let them beat us to the moon. En route to the moon, George's father had a big hand in designing the launch pad. And he used as inspiration something you might recognize from a beer garden. You see, a Saturn V has 5 engines.
They all have to push at full power before they let go, you know, go up. Then they have to be able to go up immediately. Well, something has to hold that rocket down and then let go all together. So he designed a system that holds the rocket down. It's based on the old German beer bottle.
Not the bottle caps we're used to, but the kind that open with the wire lever.
It's a cantilever, see? And so it pops back and boom, the rocket goes up. He's got a patent on that.
And go up it did. Whether we were alive then or not, we all know the story of Apollo 11, that first space flight that landed humans on the moon in 1969. Millions of households watched it on television. Astronauts Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin planted an American flag to commemorate their visit.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Nobody's been back to the moon since the last Apollo mission in 1972. No one from any country. That's surprising if you consider that it's only 3 days by rocket. George and others credit the extraordinary success of the 60s to Wernher von Braun's leadership and the atmosphere he created.
It wasn't just, okay, we're going to go to work, get my paycheck, and go home. No, we're building rockets. However long that takes, we're building rockets.
Still, it raises the question, at what cost?
Coming up, we'll take a step outside of Huntsville and the beer garden and look back in. Beyond the food, what's being done and not being done to honor the past? And what happens when one of von Braun's team is accused of war crimes? That's ahead. But first,
there is that donor music. Lodge Manufacturing is a family-owned foundry making cast iron since 1896, based in South Pittsburgh, Tennessee. Lodge has won national and international acclaim for its artisan American products. Their cookware is so in demand that they had to expand their foundry in 2015, the largest foundry expansion in their company history. To keep up with people's eagerness for more cast iron skillets, Lodge is going to build a brand new foundry and hire more than 90 new employees by March of 2017. Lodge Manufacturing is a great supporter of their community in Tennessee, just as they are great supporters of the Southern Foodways Alliance. And, well, we just wanted to congratulate them and wish them well in their latest endeavor. And now, back to Dana Bialik in Huntsville, Alabama.
Capcom second stage status and go for flash evap activation.
This is the Mission Center complex at the Space and Rocket Center. These kids are simulating mission control. In the next room, their friends are getting strapped into spacesuits. This is space camp. And today it looks more or less the same as it did when I attended back in 1999. Space camp was founded in 1982 by Ed Buckby with the goal of inspiring youth in the fields of science and engineering. Buckby's gusto for spaceflight is the product of the von Braun era. Buckby became a public affairs official for the Marshall Space Flight Center in 1959, so he was steeped in the excitement and energy of the space race, and his job was made easy by von Braun.
Well, he was a PR man's dream. He had this vision that he shared with everyone. That vision was we can go into space, we can go to the moon, and in fact, we can go to Mars.
And although von Braun wasn't born in this country, according to Buckby, he really believed in this country.
He believed in what we could do, and he found something in us that I don't think we realized. I think he uncovered a capability of people in this country that could perform a mission, could participate on a team, and could complete the challenge.
Perhaps that's why, until you're steining and dining under the Saturn V, it's easy to overlook the heritage of all of this technology. Buckby gives lectures all over the world, and he's found that most people aren't aware of the German influence in our space program.
I think they're somewhat surprised that there was a nucleus of German people involved in our program, and especially von Braun being such a leader and convincing the President of the United States that we can go to the moon, and we can beat the Russians.
It is surprising how the goal of rocket development seems to transcend former allegiances. Buckby is quick to point out that 30% of the workforce assembled by von Braun were military vets. Many of the Americans had even fought against the Germans in Germany. I asked Buckby if there was any stigma around working with that German team at the heels of World War II. His answer? No.
It was a time where you saw this merger of military-trained people coming to work in a civilian agency. The Germans were military, the Americans were military, and all of a sudden they're now working for an agency called NASA, which had no military mission. You never saw or heard conflicts. We were proud to have these very knowledgeable people in our midst.
But something happened in 1984 that made some people raise their eyebrows, especially those more distant from Huntsville and the space program. Arthur Rudolph worked under von Braun as the project director for the Saturn V. Back in Germany, Rudolph served as the production manager for the V-2. And it turns out the labor that built the V-2 came from prisoners at a concentration camp. Just like everybody who came to the U.S. under Project Paperclip, Rudolph had been screened, interrogated, really. He passed and was able to pursue American citizenship. But then, in the early 1980s, the Office of Special Investigations, or OSI, took another look at Rudolph. After just a few conversations with the OSI, Rudolph signed an affidavit stating that the things the OSI were accusing him of were true. He had exploited slave laborers as part of the Nazi Party. He agreed to renounce his citizenship and leave the country. This all happened rather quietly. At that point, Rudolph was living in California, and he and his wife had already left for Germany when the news hit Huntsville. The reaction was really visceral, especially among former friends and colleagues. Ed Buckby is convinced that had Rudolph still been in Huntsville at the time of the investigation, they would have been able to keep him there.
There was a team of people in Huntsville who were prepared to do whatever it was to defend Arthur, but it was too late.
These days, when people from Germany come to Huntsville, they can certainly find food that tastes like home. But for people like Monique Laney, Wernher von Braun's celebrity can feel a little less palatable.
When you walk through Germany and you any bigger cities, smaller cities probably as well, you will see names on, you know, street names based on people who resisted the Nazi regime. And so when you come to Huntsville, one of the first things you notice as someone who's grown up in that other environment is that it's almost the opposite from Braun's name, who many in Europe associate with the Nazi regime primarily, is, you know, the name of the civic center downtown. You see buildings named after him. You see organizations celebrating his name.
That was a very different way of thinking about people who were part of the Nazi regime that Monique was used to. Monique's father is from Alabama, and her mother's from Germany, and that's where she mostly grew up. She moved back to the U.S. in the 90s. Monique is now an assistant professor of history at Auburn University in Alabama. Monique's father married into a Huntsville family connected to the second generation from that original group of German racketeers. There were gatherings intended to keep the families of the original team connected, and Monique was invited to some of those. She realized how unusual it was to have so many specialists immigrate to the United States as a group, and it sparked her interest in a project that, in 2015, became a book called German Racketeers in the Heart of Dixie.
What I was interested in was how people in Huntsville felt about this group and how they had become really celebrated in this town over the years, so much so that when one of them was accused of war crimes, there was quite an uproar in the community about that.
Monique was curious to understand that, and so she started interviewing folks in Huntsville, first within the German community, and then she looked to others too, including those in Huntsville's Black and Jewish communities. I asked Monique how she was received in Huntsville, as a person with an interest in making sense of this history. It depended on whom she was talking to.
So amongst the Germans, the first generation, I should start out, usually with a little skepticism and concern.
This was consistent with my experience. When I started pursuing this story, I was cautioned that if I wanted people in Huntsville to talk to me, I ought to bite my tongue before using the word Nazi. I talked with the relatives of the racketeers and others that lived in Huntsville during that era, lovely and generous folks with no interest in being recorded for the radio. They'd had negative experiences with journalists in the past, people looking to cast an unpleasant light on von Braun's team.
What really surprised me was when I asked people about the case of Arthur Rudolph, the response was so vehemently opposed to thinking of the team critically and their past in Nazi Germany critically.
Monique understands that for those who lived with them for decades, who worked with them, whose families grew up alongside them, it must seem absurd that the team was somehow implicated in war crimes, specifically the Holocaust.
That, I think, is the crucial point about this book to me, is understanding that somebody far away, distant, and in the past can look really, really bad, but if they're your neighbor and you grew up with them and they're your friend, that changes your perception of them entirely.
For a long time, the National Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C. portrayed the V-2 rocket only as a forerunner to later rockets. That had been its claim to fame here in the U.S. But in the mid-90s, as part of a larger effort to contextualize technology, they changed their display. Now, alongside the V-2 rocket in Washington, D.C., there are photos of Wernher von Braun with military officers, photos of concentration camp laborers dead and emaciated, and photos of the bombings in Antwerp and London. There was a similar initiative at the Cosmosphere in Hutchinson, Kansas, to draw a visual connection between the V-2 rocket and the way people were treated at the time. The same is not true at the U.S. Space and Rocket Center in Huntsville.
So the black and white rocket right in front of us is a V-2 that was initially constructed in Germany and then brought over to New Mexico.
That's Ed Stewart. He's the curator here at the Space and Rocket Center. Next to the actual V-2 is a beautiful watercolor diagram of the rocket, and the wall beyond it chronicles how that technology evolved into the Saturn V. Ed's perfect for his job.
I am one of the biggest space geeks on the face of the planet.
Ed started as a space camp counselor and worked his way up. Not long after Ed took over the curator position, the museum honored what would have been von Braun's 100th birthday with an almost 15,000 square foot exhibit. It included things like von Braun's rocket wagon, his notebooks, and even the bicycle his brother Magnus used to reach the Americans in Germany. And there are still permanent exhibits that honor von Braun and his team. Tell me where we are right now.
So we're in kind of what we refer to as the von Braun hallway. And what we've got is encased in a glass, you know, front room, essentially, is a vignette of Wernher von Braun's office from his time at the Army Ballistic Missile Agency.
It's all there. The 50s-style desk, the family photos, the day planner. In the background, there's a television playing anecdotes from people who knew von Braun personally. And then, at the far end of the hallway, is a wax bust of the man himself. But nowhere is there mention of the concentration camps or the labor that went into the V-2 rocket development in Germany. You don't have to be in this exhibit very long to realize that von Braun is idolized around here. And Ed Stewart will be the first to tell you that he did a lot for Huntsville. The city developed along with all of this rocket technology. Von Braun and his team brought more than just pumpernickel bread and sauerkraut. With them came the opportunity to develop local industry and education, and grow Huntsville into the sort of prosperous place it is today. Monique Laney doesn't dispute that point.
We do have a lot to thank this team for. There's no question about that. I really do think we should celebrate what they have accomplished and how they've helped us along. At the same time, recognizing the bargain that we've made, all the people who have perished in order to allow this technology to be developed during World War II, for us to be here, essentially, and to have the space race.
There's a German term, and I can only attempt to say it.
Wer gang hier sperrwalder gang? How did I do?
Close. But so for all the German speakers, it's Vergangenheitsbewältigung.
It's a term that came about in the 50s and 60s. It's specific to Germans trying to make sense of the Nazi past and the Holocaust.
And it came out of the efforts of trying to cope with what had happened, the opposite of denying what happened, essentially, trying to gear towards honesty and towards understanding.
It's part of official policy in Germany, and Monique's upbringing in the German school system was very much informed by this term. She uses it in her book to contrast what she was seeing in Huntsville.
As a German growing up in Germany, you know, we're used to finding it complicated to have any national pride. That's what we grow up with in the aftermath. You know, being proud of being German is still not easy. And so to us, it seems odd that you can have such pride without
some kind of okay, but, you know?
And like Monique said, the U.S. space program is something to be proud of, no question. But she thinks it's productive for us to complicate that pride.
It's not all silver and gold. There is a little bit of tar somewhere here as well. Most Americans don't want to hear that.
On Thursday nights at the U.S. Space and Rocket Center, all of the half-steps of the polka, the steins of Hefeweizen, the thick slices of black forest cake, they can feel like Americans overlooking a complicated past. But providing a more nuanced picture doesn't mean that the celebration needs to stop. As Monique says, why can't we do both? There are many that think that we haven't yet done an adequate job of recognizing those German racketeers. It troubles George von Tiesenhausen that more people in this country don't understand just how pivotal the Germans were in building the space program, and really, in building the city.
It's kind of kept quiet, yeah, I guess. I don't know why.
Perhaps it has something to do with our discomfort as Americans, with the less savory pieces of that history.
I think that just a general recognition of the German presence and contribution to every citizen of Huntsville might be a good thing. I think that's missing.
You think that maybe feeding people schnitzel underneath the Saturn rocket is a good place to start?
Yeah, I think it's a great place to start. Yes, yes.
And it can be schnitzel served up with both recognition of the German racketeers and of the history those rockets were built on.
Dana Bialik is a radio producer based in New Orleans, and she was, until very recently, also Gravy's intern. Thanks to Pat Amons, the director of communications at the U.S. Space and Rocket Center, for her help in facilitating this piece. Music for this episode was by Kevin MacLeod, Blue Dot Sessions, Lisa Germano, and Michael Hurst. Gravy's theme music is by Wendell Patrick. Our donor music is by Jazar. Coming up, a taste of the next episode of Gravy. But first, thinking about traveling to Huntsville to check out the space rockets and eat some schnitzel with what's left of your summer? Wherever you plan to go during these last days of blistering heat or summer freedom, check out the Southern Foodways Alliance's website. Our documentary projects, films, and oral history interviews will deepen your appreciation of the places you travel. While you're online at southernfoodways.org, you can also become an SFA member. The cost is super reasonable, and member dollars make SFA work possible, including this podcast, which, by the way, just began its fourth season with today's episode. Thank you so much for listening and reviewing us on iTunes, maybe, if you get a sec. Coming up on the next episode of Gravy, a couple of millennials on the hunt for apples.
Fruit trees in general, if you start recognizing their form and you get really excited about it, the landscape just lights up. It used to be, for me, I'd look for skate spots, but now I look for fruit trees.
Fruit exploring in the 21st century. That's next time. You are listening to Gravy. I'm Tina Antolini for the Southern Foodways Alliance. And as you go about your daily life, please remember, make cornbread, not war.